This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne.
Hello, everyone. You have found us on the Embracing Change podcast. We're so happy you've joined us. We are talking with Lakrita Bowman about her 30-year journey, and the name of the season is Leaving Prison to Build a Pulpit, the 30-year journey. This episode, we're talking about uncovering performance versus producing. And what were you thinking when you originally were outlining the seasons and you came to this subject? Because each subject has a very specific thing for your life.
Exactly, because what I was thinking about, you know, I've kind of shared a lot of deep, intimate things of how I even got to a place where I am or where I had this vision. And so I'm going to talk about, in this specific topic, I want to talk about how easy it is to come out of such traumatic experiences and learning how to live a new life. And if you're not careful, you'll get on the stage called life and start being a performer. And so I didn't want to be a performer. I wanted to be a producer. I wanted to produce something. I wanted to see what was going to be produced out of my pain.
And when you say performer, are you meaning like being whatever the situation demands that
exactly,
you be?
Exactly.
And not yourself so much?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think so often what I've seen over the years of working with people, they're more performers than they are producers.
Yeah.
They have great ideas of things they want to do and how they're going to do it, but produce nothing. Hmm. And so I think a lot of it is that even in our growth, in our stunt, we are stunt in our growth and development. And so for me, as I've shared all the letters about my, you know, being in counseling, being, you know, in that place, by the time that I got out of counseling, I talked a little bit about getting married. You know what I'm saying? My husband, we still hope he'll come on the show, hasn't decided yet, and that's fine. But I just realized that as the journey began, I really wanted, you know, to figure out. I was really good, you guys, with just staying out of prison. I didn't want to do anything else. I was fine. If the performance of my life was I got the Academy Oscar and all those other awards, if it was just Lakrita didn't go back to prison, that would have been the greatest award that I could have received.
Yeah, that's what you were mainly focused on.
And that was my only focus.
Yeah,
I didn't have any other thing that I wanted to see come out of this. I just didn't want to go back to prison. And so I feel like that all the catechism classes, the Bible study, the community groups, me meeting my husband, me marrying, me, of course, getting a relationship restored with my son, all of those things were good enough. I was good. And as long as I continue what work I put in to continue to go into counseling, every so often I still do this. Every 3 years I go into counseling. And so I knew that counseling was going to be a continuation of my life because I had been stuck so long in a certain position that I knew that it was going to take double work to get me unstuck and then triple work to keep me from ever going back to being stuck. And so when I say performance versus producing, I just didn't want to become an actor in my own life. I felt like I had really already been performing. Hmm. Most of my life, I was a performer. Whatever, a chameleon, whatever I needed to be is what I was. And those are survival techniques.
Yeah.
And I wanted, you know, the Bible talks about in Galatians 5 and 22, it talks about the fruit of the Spirit. And to me, that is producing fruit in your life. And I wanted to be a producer versus a performer. And so when I was thinking about this, I was thinking, how often in our lives have we been performing and not producing? And most of us have gotten stuck in certain positions and ways of thinking, and we believe our own lies. We believe that the lie that we've told ourselves is our truth. And so therefore, why would I think I need to do anything else? Because what I'm doing. And even for me, just staying out of prison was getting ready to be a way to perform.
So what shifted it for you?
Well, I think that what shifted was one day in church, I was, in a moment of worship service, and I had not, like I said, everybody that knows my story knows that I heard this still small voice that said I would never have definition of meaning until I come back to the source. I don't feel like, and I've said this in these other episodes, that I heard that there was some spooky voice guiding me through every situation. These were things that I was postured toward and I felt led to do, and I fought for them, whether it was in counseling, while I was in the halfway house, whatever it was I have shared thus far. I did not hear a voice, an audible voice telling me to do these things. These were just things that I felt I needed to do, like I shared about getting my power back, and didn't know that all of this was going to be necessary for the next steps. But I just felt like that I needed to do these things. And so I did them. And so in worship one day, I heard that voice again. And that voice said to me, would you be willing to go back into the darkness and be the light for other people? Because you know where the snakes are, you know where the pitfalls are, you know where the caves or the shadows of a cave, you know where they are. Would you be willing to do that? And I said, heck no. I'm not right. Gonna do that.
Right.
Because again, thought. Remember, hold on. What did I say? I had gotten okay with just staying out of prison.
Yeah.
So guess what I was doing? I was performing. I was performing all the right things. I was aligning my life, and not saying that those things were wrong. But if you're not careful, you still can become a performer even in doing good. Mm. And so I was doing the necessary footwork that I needed to do to perform, just to perform enough to not steal, not go back to prison. I got my son back, and so now I'm a performer, be a mother, and do what's necessary. I'm going to try to perform and be the best wife, and I'm going to continue to perform to try to grow some and stay in a community and go to church. And when I say that, because we will exchange one prison for another. And for me, my relationship to God, I was performing.
Yeah,
I had become a performer for God because I seen him as this big, spooky warden. And if I didn't dot my I's and cross my T's, then some kind of way I was going to end up back where I was, not understanding that he was a relational God.
Yeah, that wasn't his heart.
That's not his heart towards me. So I was still performing.
Yeah.
So that's why I said performing versus producing. So when I heard that voice, I said, heck no. Because again, when you are a black and white thinker and when you are a A-type kind of personality that I am, whatever I do, I give it all I got.
Yeah.
I give it all of me. If I go to prison and I do this, I'm giving it all I got. It ain't no great. I'm going to give it all I got. So to do this life, I was giving it all I had.
Yeah.
And so that meant I was going to do everything I needed to do not to go back to prison. Because guess what? That for me was good enough. But that wasn't good enough for God. He had so much more for me. But yes. I didn't know that he had more for me.
Yeah.
Because I was not necessarily in the relationship with him. I was now a performer for him. And I don't know how many of us out there are, if we really be honest, that even you may not be that now, but in the beginning of your relationship to your life after coming out of trauma, coming out of pain, coming out of these kind of things, how many of us really think of God as a taskmaster?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a normal thing coming out of trauma because you learn growing up.
You can't trust people.
You can't trust people, so you become what you need to just not cause a wave, not get beaten, not, whatever it is.
Exactly. And so when I was looking at this journey, it was more or less God showing me that, let's talk, I want you to tell the audience about how you was a performer in this journey. And so when I heard that voice, I was like, heck no. Like, because to me, what would that mean for me to go back into the darkness? All I could think about was I was going to have to encounter people like me. And I knew I know how hard I was. Like, no. And I don't want to deal with people who look like me, smell like me, taste like me, seem like me. No.
Yeah.
I want to get as far away from my life as I can. But the little did I know that the real deliverance or the real relationship was in the possibility of him inviting me back into the fire, back into the darkness. That was the real relationship building, because now it would be everything I had done up to this point, whether it was him or just life or however, it was very strategically put together to now to go into the darkness and trust him would mean that I would have to give up something I had gotten comfortable with. I knew how to go to work. I knew how to pay my bills. I knew how to do those things. So to go outside of that would mean to do, it would almost mean the same voice that I heard in prison. Now I'm hearing it again. I recognize that voice.
Yeah.
It had not spoke to me all through all these years. I'm talking, I probably only have been out of prison about 4 years by this time. You know what I mean? But it was long enough for me to know that I thought I had the perfect life. I wasn't in prison. So I was performing. And I was doing whatever I needed to do to make sure I didn't go to prison. Not knowing that not going to prison was I was building a new prison in my own rights. And so that for me is why I came up with the topic producing versus, performing versus producing.
Yeah.
Because God was inviting me on a journey to produce more character, more light, more opportunity. He was giving me those opportunities, and I didn't want them. And so the God that we serve and that I serve and that loves me individually, he may have his own, you may say you're his favorite, and that's fine. But I really am, and I'm not taking it back.
That's right.
And so because of the love that he has for us corporately but individually, he did not, that relationship, that voice did not condemn me. It didn't shame me.
Yeah.
It didn't force me. I heard it. I said no to it. And I'm telling you, just as soon as I said no, I didn't feel anything. I continued to worship. And 6 months in my life, I went on about my business, still performing my own prison in a new way.
And you never thought about that question in that 6 months that you were going on your
Never thought about it again. Went on my way.
Wow.
Continue to do what I always do, go to work, pay my bills, see my son every other weekend, be a wife, perform at my job, do my best, pay my bills, same stuff, just a routine life.
Stability.
Very much stability.
Yeah, that's what
I thought. I was creating stability.
Yeah.
And that, I think that we have to do that. So all of it is, not we have to. All of that is part of the journey.
It's a teacher.
It's a teacher. Stability is a teacher.
Yeah.
And so that's all I wanted. So I could have been happy, and I could have lived and died on the hill of stability. I was fine. So no, I didn't hear the voice again. I didn't think about it. And then I went on a women's conference in South Carolina with my church, minding my own business. Again, stable, just doing something I had never done. Was in women's, they had a women's ministry, and they had put together a conference, and I wanted to go. And I thought it was great, and, first experience, And we got there. We got launched in our own areas. We went to one of the services, and there was a pastor named Ayanna Lott, and she was from Detroit, Michigan. And she was preaching out of the scriptures when it says about the crumbs that fall from the master's table. And then they was, you know, it talks about, you know, and then I remember the person who was, you know, in that scripture talks about, she was saying, well, isn't even, don't we even have the right to have the crumbs from the master's table? You know, because at that time they was doing division about Israel, I think it was, and, you know, it was like, you know, this person could get it and this person couldn't, and, you know, and she was breaking it down. And then she was, her teaching primarily, she said, but God is not only just saying that, but he's also asking people to go out to the highways and the byways, you know, because even, you know, the dogs can eat from the master tables. And then she said, how many dogs do we have here? She said, people who have come from desolate lives that know, you know what I'm saying, that God is calling you to go help other people find their way. And I'm saying, she was preaching and it was good. We was all screaming because a lot of us, you know, it was just ministering to us.
Yeah.
And out of nowhere, she pointed me out and she said to me, you. And I mean, of course, it was a lot of people. It's probably 1,000 women in that room. And so, like, but she some kind of way pinpointed me out. And finally, when I finally was like, and she's like, yes, you. And she asked me to come up. She said, the Lord has asked of you. No, she said, the Lord has given you an invitation. He has asked something of you. And you told him no. And he wants me to say to you that he's going to ask you again. And he pray and he hopes that you will say yes. But he will not beg you. And he will not stop loving you if you choose to say no.
Wow.
And I knew in that moment. Now, then I thought about the invitation. I thought about 6 months ago when he asked me, you know, and I was like, oh, my God, how would this woman know that the Lord has spoke this to me? And that's when I start seeing the ability of prophetic work in the church, that God really does speak to the hearts of men. And then he uses men, humans, to do his greatest work, as long as their hearts are postured in a way to create, you know, to be open to do and not be afraid.
Yeah.
And so in that moment, I just realized that, you know, okay. And, you know, I cried and, you know, a lot of us talked about it throughout the conference. And so when I got back home, I just remember saying to the Lord, I'm not sure what you're asking of me. But if you, like I told the judge, if you show me what it means of what you're asking, I would be willing to learn.
If someone would teach me.
If someone, I would be willing.
Yeah.
And I said that to him. And so I feel like that was the beginning of me beginning to leave out of performance to produce. And in that moment, I just began to look at ways, and I remember I don't even want to say how long it was, but it was shortly after that time. I was in church again. I don't know why I always am in church, but I had this, and maybe it's where he speaks to me. I had this moment, or I can't say if I was in the body or out of the body. I didn't hear a voice, but I just saw these homes. I saw these homes for people coming out of prison and coming, and they just was like houses. And like, I saw them being able to have this community and be able to be safe and secure, and they could just stay and they wouldn't have to jump through loops and do all kind of flips. And those who are willing, let them come. If they just want to come and eat and get, you know what I'm saying, feel. It was just, I saw this and I couldn't really understand what it was. And so I just kept saying to the Lord, what is this I'm seeing? And then I remember he gave me the words one day. He said, it's having the courage to change. I want you to create a community called Having the Courage to Change. And I'm like, what? What does that mean? What does that look like? And I remember going to Neil Tillo, because to me, Talbot House was the closest thing I could recognize that as. And so I remember talking to Neil and saying, I think I'm supposed to start a program or something, and I'm not really sure what that looks like. And Neil began to tell me things, you know, that what it would take to do that, and he began to kind of guide me and mentor me. And then I remember out of nowhere, I wrote this plan. It's named, and it was in 96 that I wrote it. And it has having the courage to change, the plans and the goals. And I wrote it on this paper, and the first one was to stay focused on the guidance of God. The second one was finding financing for the program. And then enter into a relationship with other agencies. Then introducing the vision and program to other churches and extending our services to them. Recruit volunteers for our program. Establish the housing part of the program. And for the entire program to be founded along with staffing and program services offered. Those was my seven things that I wrote down.
Wow.
And that was in April of 1996. I wrote these down. And I said, okay, God, I'll just stay focused on your guidance. You show me. And then from there, out of no place, you know, like I know it's out of him, I ended up getting, you know, this vision about what that could look like, you know, what having the courage to change. It was like I really wanted to do a halfway house. I wanted to do what Talbot House had, but I didn't want it to be a Talbot House. I wanted it to be Christ-filled. I wanted to make disciples. I wanted it to be faith-based. I wanted it to be Christ-centered. I wanted, you know, I had all these ideas, and, you know, and I was like, okay. And so I went to Bishop Dantley, and I showed him the vision, and he kept it for 6 months. And then when he kept it for 6 months, he came back and said, I don't think that this is something that the church ought to do, that God is calling you to do it. And he believes that you have everything in you to get it done.
Oh, wow.
And so he gave me the vision back because I wrote this whole program out, and he gave it back to me, and he said, and I think God is calling you to go establish it. And so in that time I went, and Charles and I got a house, and in that house I found out all the guidelines. That's what I did. I found out how to start producing the guidelines. What does that look like? What does that mean? You know, because in the world, you can be in the world, but not of the world. But as you are in it, you still have to follow guidelines of how to establish things. And right. So I don't have a high school diploma. I mean, I have a GED. I don't have a college degree in business. So everything that I was doing was, my first goal was, Lord, guide me. If you teach me, I'll learn. And so I found out through the city and state of certain things you could do and certain things you couldn't do. And so if I wanted to open up a home, I could open up my home with five unrelated people. I wouldn't have to have a lot of the licensure stuff. I could just invite people in almost, you know, into my home. And as long as the house was in the way, then I found out I needed to get a 501c3. Then I needed to get, you know, my tax ID, just all the things. And I found a way to get it done. I did them on my own. I got, you know, I [S2] Wow. [S1] Would ask for help. I got it done. I ended up with a 501c3. I ended up with my vision. I ended up, you know, with my stuff and just everything. And it wasn't easy. I actually tried five times before I was approved. So, but you know, that's what I'm saying. I sent my information in five or six times before they actually approved me.
You talking about the government, the federal government?
I mean, it was like, no, you need this. No, you need that. No, you need this. No, you need that. And no,
wow.
You know, and so, but I just kept pushing through. And then finally, I remember the sixth time when it came back, it was approved. Having the Courage to Change was now a nonprofit organization. Charles and I was the signatures, you know, people on it. It was just amazing. And so, okay, what do I do now? You know, what's next? And then that's when we found our first house. We moved into it in July of 96. We moved into it. And then Talbot House volunteered, you know, donated me some beds, and we fixed it up. And then January of on the 15th of January of 1997, we opened up Having the Courage to Change for five unrelated women. And I'm telling you, the day we opened it, we already had our first five women.
Wow.
And, you know what I'm saying, I quit my job, and Charles was the person, he was working, so it paid our mortgage, it paid our house payment, you know, it paid for food, and the women, it gave me a chance to just be there with the women, and just teach, and just, you know, share with them, and I had the, you know, some classes that we would do, and we would have worship in the morning, and we would just, it was just amazing. I was living amongst the people. I was with the people that I was, that I still was, and that I once was.
Yeah.
And it just was amazing to me to see that the Lord was taking me from a place of performing to producing like-minded people. Yeah. And to be able to share who I had been and what could be possible for them. That the possibility was so, I guess I would say that I wanted them to see that nothing was impossible. And even though I will say to you all, I still didn't have the true relationship that, but I know that that was part of the beginning of producing this relationship that I now have 30 years later with Christ. But it started with me saying no to him, and it started with me being a performer in our relationship, because I seen him as my taskmaster, to finally trusting that if he can speak to a woman I did not know from across miles of where I lived to confirm what he had said to me in a time of worship,
yeah,
that I did not repeat to anyone else.
Yeah.
It would only be amazing what else he could do.
Oh, man.
And so as I continue to move into those spaces and I continue to move those women and work with those women, and of course there's other volunteers did come, and I had my board and they volunteered, and it's just everything that was on my list began to come in. He started producing it.
Didn't you also make a list of, like, that you needed a van and you needed, like, all of these things, like you wrote out a budget?
That was after the first year that I was open.
Yeah, and how God showed up and said, boom, here you go.
Well, he showed up in a different way. I mean, I wrote this, you know, like the things that I had, like Having the Courage to Change monthly operational budget for the Eve House, because that's what was the first house that I had, was Eve House. And so, you know, everything that, you know, I wrote up, it's called the love plan, you know, so people would know that they were loved, and not a treatment plan, but a love plan.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the physical and the mental and the spiritual and the assessments, and just these are things that everything that God ever did for me through this whole process, it was preparing me, the phases, phase 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. All of this was the original plan that I had, you know, that he gave me. And I just wrote it, and then I just followed the plan. I followed, like, the things that he told me to do, and I did it, and it was prosperous. And so, yes, in 97, the end of 97, I wrote another plan. I wrote a vision. I call it a prayer plan. And I said to the Lord, I would like to not only have vans, but I want to get paid. You know, if this is my purpose, or this is where I'm going to land, I want to have a staff. I want to be able to, you know, have more women. I want to be able to have more opportunities. And I really want you to do that. And I'm going to write this down and put it in my God's jar, and I'm going to believe you for it. And that was in we wrote that vision in December of 97. And in April of 98, City Gospel Mission came. And they knocked on the door and said that we were, you know, they set up an appointment. But my point is someone else told them about this girl that was in Evanston doing what they wanted to do. So while, let me just say how God works. Now, I opened this house up in January of 97. In April of 97, one of the board members, Ferd Avel, had an encounter with a woman in Westwood. And he stopped and they went to McDonald's. He got her some food, but he didn't have any place to refer her to. So he came back to the board of City Gospel Mission and he said, I know we've always just served men, but what about us inquiring or looking at serving women? And they said, okay, well, let's look at that idea. And they bounced it around for about 6 months. So that would have been April. 6 months from there would have been maybe about November. You know what I'm saying? So they took it to the board in their November board of 97. I wrote this stuff that I wrote in December of 97. So as I moved on, I guess they began to move towards their plan and what they were going to do. And then Ed Perrine, which was the president of City Gospel Mission at the time, was in a meeting with Charles Klingman, and he told Charles that they were looking at opening up a women's program. And Charles Klingman said, our church is connected to a young lady that goes to our church. She is really doing it. She's been doing it for almost over a year now, and it's really been successful. She's really done some great work. I think you ought to meet her. And so he gave him my number. They set up a meeting, came over to our house in that April of 98. I'm talking about a God that has a plan.
Yeah.
To prosper us, to make us prosperous, and to produce what he wants. And so when they came to me, they had this whole idea. They had a house over on Gathy, which is in Mount Arvin. They were renovating it at the time, and they did not even have the skeleton of the program. And so they began to ask me, would I be willing to come alongside them and help them put this thing together? And that's what I did. I said, yes, it was like dating them. And I asked them, I said, well, what would that mean? And they said, well, it could mean a lot of things. And I said, well, give me two things it could mean. And they said, well, we could pay you. I was like, okay. I said, but what else? They said, we already have vans, so we can transport the women back and forth. I was like, okay, what else? And they said, I think we could just be a great team together. You know, it seems like you have the vision, you know what you're doing, you've been through some things, and so why don't you just partner with us for a year and we'll see what happens. And I am telling you that partnership, through that year, they were honorable. Bishop Danley gave them two conditions for me to even partner with them. And one was that they would honor anything they said to me and that they would not clip my wings. And what he meant by that, meaning that my wings had been clipped most of my life. And if somebody was going to come alongside me, they needed to let me not be caged and be free to fly. And not clip my wings. And wow. If they could not promise him that, he would not release me to go with them.
Wow.
And Ed promised them both. I will not clip her wings. And I will be, we will, whatever we say we'll do it. And I am telling you, that is when I began to see my relationship shift with God. And then it became personal. And I wasn't no longer a performer. I wanted to be a producer for God. I wanted to produce the fruit in my life to be lasting and honorable.
Yeah.
And so in all of that, I will, you know, we'll talk more about why I know in the next, you know, thing about it being, you know, how this was seeing my purpose as my pulpit, because I think so often we look at pulpits as someone in the church being on Sunday mornings. But I know that a pulpit is so much bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't get to the place as Christians or it's just as people definitely Christians, definitely kingdom people, to get out of the posture of believing that a pulpit has to be in a church. We're going to lose the opportunity to help him save the world.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's heavy. I mean, that's heavy. We've got to be like totally keyed in and listening to exactly. what God is wanting us to do and to see our purpose so much more than church.
Exactly.
Or religion or exactly. whatever. Exactly. Tradition. Yeah.
All of those values yeah. and beliefs that we have more and more we have them. You know what I'm saying? We've got to get to a place where we get away from that perspective.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up there and we will see you guys next time.
Hi, guys. Every week we get the honor of spending time with you, sharing our hearts and offering insights into all the ways we get turned around as people and hopefully showing an escape route to better choices. Another place that is offering the same type of path for better opportunities is City Gospel Mission. Since 1924, they've been a beacon of hope to the homeless, those recovering from life-controlling issues, youth, and to those needing job services. If you'd like to volunteer or donate, you can visit www.citygospelmission.org. That is www.citygospelmission.org. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2021 by Lacreta Bowman.